Well, we're going to take some time tonight, as I said, to share a little bit of what the Lord has been doing in our midst and kind of our vision for the future in a succinct way, as succinctly as we can tonight. A few weeks ago, we told you of the opportunity that is before us to purchase roughly 13 acres, nearly 13 acres, just to the side of us and then behind us, so it basically would be the Griffiths house, which is the first house right here, right behind the parking lot, that brick house, which also includes, it goes straight back right between the houses, includes this drive out here, this driveway, the green land right here, the grassland right here, that drive, and straight back, nearly 13 acres, including a cornfield. On that also is another dwelling, a mobile home right now, a wooded area that will become the Calvary Hunting Preserve and pastoral rights, of course. No, wooded land back there, 13 acres, basically, and would really allow us to do some wonderful things. I want to just take 5 minutes tonight, and then I've asked Corey to come and kind of help set the scene for us. I just want to talk about maybe 3 minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about history and what the Lord has done. I had told you a couple of weeks ago, you know, it was probably, some of you were here then, you remember about 15, 16, 17 years ago, leaving a morning service and walking out this door and standing in this field over here, joining hands and praying and asking God to give us that land. How many of you were here? You remember that? All right, a couple of you remember that. And just praying and asking the Lord, God, give us that. Of course, our desire, we'll talk about this in a little while, is to do everything that we do with being debt-free. And by the way, God has provided in that way. And just in the last 3 years, over $500,000 in improvements to the property and various things, just in that one area, not to mention all of the ministry expenses that have gone on in the last couple of years. So, and God, we don't owe a dime. We don't owe anybody anything. And that's a wonderful, wonderful joy. And but I was talking to Linda Lusk this week, and she said, you know, back when Pastor Lusk first got here in 84, she said that he had started talking with Jack, who owned the property at the time. Now, those conversations weren't always the best. The neighbors were not always the most easy to get along with, and maybe we weren't the easiest to get along with either. I don't know. But he started talking then and praying then 25 years ago. God, give us that land. God, give us that land. And I was just thinking, you know, when we got the call, when Jeff called, the owner of the property now, he called me the other week and said, you know, I'm putting up the property for sale. And I said, great, glad. I had forgotten. It wasn't even in my mind anymore that maybe the Lord would give that to us. And a few days later, somebody called and said, look, we'd like to make, if you guys are agreeable, we'd like to help you buy that church, that area. And I think the sum was $210,000 or somewhere around there, $215,000. We'd like to give to the church and help you to buy that. And so obviously that got the wheels turning again. And just thinking what the Lord can do. And then ultimately we won the bid and we're able to get that. And looking forward to settlement on January 15th, 2013. And so 25, 26 years, and maybe even from before then, who knows how long that God's church has been praying that if the Lord would want us to have that, that would come about. And now 25, 26 years later, we get the opportunity to benefit from those prayers and that work. And seeing what God has done here and what God, not just what God has done here, folks, but what God has done here. And each of you are testimony to that, right? What God has done in your heart, whether you're young or old or in between, what God has done here and in our hearts has been we can't even say it's a blessing. It's such a thing that we can only attribute to being from God. And understanding that He's at work, and nobody can say this is we're the explanation for this. This is God's deal. This is something God is doing, and we get to come along and be part of. We get to participate together in what he is doing. And looking back on this history, understanding that there's a whole, we're going to talk about this in just a little while again, there's many, many years that have led up to this point. All right? As I said this morning, you might get to the point where you're overwhelmed. You have so many things to do, so much weight on you, so many burdens. Look, I know we can get tired, right? But all I've learned in these last years is that God's not looking for anybody who can help him. He's just looking for people who need him and who'll be faithful servants that he can work through. And that's one thing I appreciate about this church, this body of believers over these years, to see that we understand that and that God's just working in us and giving us the strength to do what he's going to do. So I want you to listen to Corey as he shares with you a little bit about our plans, our thoughts, what we can do with some of this property, and kind of where we're going, though we won't be able to lay everything out specifically just because there are so many unknowns yet. Just listen and watch what the Lord will do. Just begin to think of what the Lord will do in us and through us for his glory. All right, Corey, would you?
Yeah, I think that's actually a great place to start, actually, is looking back. Think about it this way. First of all, where would we be right now if they hadn't built this church, right? So if we thought we're gonna start with a church here, we'd be starting from scratch, right? We wouldn't have this building to begin with. We wouldn't have this body of believers to begin with. So I think that we need to look back and just kind of reflect for a moment on what those people did. I think 1951, a year ago, Pastor Joe had distributed the history of the church, and I just remember the impact that made on me when I read through that and realized these people had a vision for Calvary Bible Church, and they started this work. And so we start thinking about buildings and facilities and all of those kinds of things. We have to reflect back on that for a moment and realize what they had in mind probably really doesn't look like what we see today, what we think of as Calvary Bible Church, right? There was no Helder Hall, probably no overflow wings. It was the central building. And so I think that it's important for us to reflect back on that history because that's going to help us to understand how difficult it is to look into the future and predict all things. But one thing is consistent. We have to be prepared for change, right? So what I want to do is start out and think about why. Why? Why is change necessary? Why do we need to plan for the future? Why do we need to prepare for change? And you know, if you know me, I like to boil it down to three specific things. And those three things in my mind at this point, as we've been reflecting on the facilities with the elders and what their vision is and with the building team and what the challenges are and kind of bridging that and also listening to the congregation, first and foremost has to be safety. Safety is always the place that my mind goes as a father, and I'll develop that a little bit more. But then something else that proves to be a challenge for us right now is flexibility. The needs of our ministry are changing. How we use the facilities is changing. Just a quick example, what had been a gym is now a very flexible multi-use facility. And so when you think about that, that's pretty important. But then there's also this zoomed out view. My third point is really that we're good stewards of the campus that we have. That we're looking at the whole of the campus and how the whole thing is used. And now when we're talking about expanding that campus, that becomes even more important because the dollars go way up. So thinking back on the original view of these people that built this church, they laid the foundation that built this congregation. And so they built this building, and we benefit from their hard work. But think about what they envisioned, you know, the small group in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. Can they imagine what this is expanded into. In other words, the way that we use the facilities, the size of the facilities, the scale, the attendance, and all those different things. Even the fact that we have, you know, 10 regularly attended Sunday school classes every Sunday. You know, those kinds of things are difficult to anticipate. Helder Hall probably wasn't considered. And so we can, you know, think about that building and how it's changed. I said from a gym into a multi-use facility. You know, that really is a good example of how our needs are changing. Some of you are part of that. Some of you, you know, I was pinging Donna this afternoon for a little bit of information, and even Larry, you know, he's rattling off well, we did this then, and this is how we did this, and this how much this costs, and all these different things. And oh my goodness, to see firsthand that whole progression, it really gives you a perspective on how much things have changed. And so change can be really tough to absorb. But to prepare for that in revisiting the past, hopefully we'll get a better picture for planning into the future. Some things that Pastor Joe already mentioned, avoiding long-term debt. That's pretty important. We could very easily jump into this. We could very easily get in over our heads in terms of debt. But we believe that we are not to extend ourselves beyond what God has provided for us. Pastor Joe says repeatedly, where God guides, he provides. And we believe that. But we need to make sure, you know, that we don't get ahead of that. And really what happens when we get ahead of that, when we go into that long-term debt, what happens is we're maybe putting the name of Calvary Bible Church ahead of God's name. In other words, we want it. We want it so badly that we're willing to do whatever it takes to get that. And I recognize in our congregation there's a real resistance to that, and I really appreciate that. But that's important when we think about all of this stuff. The challenge is, with the resources that we have, we constantly need to be reaching out to more people, not just here in East Prospect, although here, right, in our little towns, we need to be reaching more people. We need to reach out across the world. And so we do that. We do that here in the church as a congregation. We do that in the world through spread of grace, whether it be New York City or somewhere else in the world, Ethiopia, Mexico, whatever the case is. So when you think about that, that's really our goal. But I'm here to talk about building and facilities, right? So why am I talking about ministry? Well, that's why the facilities exist. I know that's obvious, right? I mean, you know that. I'm stating an obvious thing, but we have to stop and think about that. Why do we have these buildings? What are they here for? That's what they're here for, to facilitate ministry, expansion for exaltation. What's the purpose? We got to keep the main thing the main thing. So when we talk about buildings and facilities and all that kind of stuff, we've got to keep that focus. The main thing is glory to God, exaltation of God's name. And it happens through the ministries that are facilitated by these buildings and the grounds. So start thinking in terms of these areas. Large open spaces for youth gatherings. Office spaces where administrators can do their work effectively without worrying about wearing short pants so their feet don't get wet. Using a shop vac to suck all the water out of the carpet at the end of the day. You know, that's something that's a recurring theme for us. How about study areas? So people that are actually trying to study and prepare to teach the word can focus on what they need to study. Musical spaces with good acoustics. You know, acoustics, does it matter? Sure it does. Sure it does. Last but not least, you know, space for Sunday services. We saw this morning, I believe the number was about 215. Realistically, our capacity is much higher, but we're starting to get a little bit pressed at that number. That's interesting. So we need to facilitate that. Now, I know whenever we talk about that capacity, you know, capacity is a relative term. If you want to count every single seat that's in here, we could seat theoretically 300. You know, we could be pushing 280 to 300 by the seating that we have. And in our perfect, theologically mature world, that may be the case. But guess what? We really want people to be welcome in our church who maybe are not quite that mature, who don't know us, who are visitors. Are they going to feel comfortable coming in when we're pressed to find seating? Do you really want to be a visitor and come walking in and be forced to the front row? Are you going to be comfortable with that? Are you going to ask people to move so you can get to the empty space in the center of the pew? Right? So these are things to think about. And it's not just necessarily seating capacity, it's utilization of the seating that we do have. You know, I think that the way that I thought about this is that we recognize the church is made up of both redeemed and unredeemed people, ideally. Members and guests. Traditionalists, modernists. I think that sometimes, though, we think that the ideal mix is a fully redeemed audience, but I don't think that's the case as long as there are unredeemed people out in the community. Does that make sense? Right? I mean, that's Again, main thing is the main thing. We want unredeemed people to feel welcome as part of our body. We want them to come in. And you know that I'm not advocating doctrinal compromise. What I'm saying is that we need to be reaching out to those around us, but be prepared to be hospitable. When they come to visit, it's important that we think about hospitality. You know, 1 Timothy chapter 3 talks about hospitality in the church leadership. It's an important theme to remember in the church body. And it's funny, Drene and I were just reflecting on this afternoon, thinking about, you know, where we've lived and how hospitality has been impacted in that time. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we first moved to our property, we were in a very, very small house trailer, right? And it's kind of hard to be hospitable. And so let's just go there for a moment, not necessarily to the house trailer, but think about hospitality. So I invite you to my home. I tell you where I live, and you kind of can pick it out, but it wasn't really clear how to get into my house. Where do I park at your house? And where do I enter? Which door do I use? How do I get in there? And when I get there, there's not enough seating. I can't comfortably sit with my family at your house. So no matter how big your heart is, no matter how good the food is, are you genuinely being hospitable if you didn't plan and prepare for my visit? Does that make sense? So we have to think of it in terms of hospitality. Our church is not just challenged to be hospitable in heart and in nature, but we need to make our facilities hospitable so that when a guest comes this evening and visits, it's dark outside. Where do they go? Where do they park? How do they safely cross our parking lot? What if they have little kids? All these different things come into play. And so when you think about that, you know, focus on the hospitality. I think that if we see that, we start to understand a little more clearly. But what it takes is for us to actually step outside of what's familiar and forget that we know exactly where to go, where to sit, where to park. We park in the same places every Sunday. We sit in the same places every Sunday, right? So it's just routine for us. What if you're a stranger? What if you have no idea? Worse yet, what if it's one of your guests that you've invited and they don't feel comfortable coming in? So enough said about that. I've talked a lot about the use of the facilities and the hospitality of facilities, but there's a word that I used at the beginning, and that is safety. You know, again, we can expect that a mature member of Calvary Bible Church, yeah, safety is not really going to be an issue. You can avoid any dangerous scenarios. But I can remember when I first joined our building team, and I was trying to remember what year that was, how many years ago that was, but I remember a recurring theme at that time was about safety of our children. And it always transitions into a discussion of parenting styles and all of those different things. But, you know, I have a four-year-old, and I realize he doesn't always behave in the way that I would expect him to behave. I know that's not true of your children, but I'll confess. And you know what? He doesn't always consider that I shouldn't run full bore through a parking lot, right? He doesn't always consider that I shouldn't run around and play on the street side of the church because there are no adults to watch me out there. These are the kind of things that play into that. And actually, I mean, even my older kids and some of their friends playing ball in a dark, unlit parking lot, not necessarily the most safe scenario. My point with all of that is that we have a responsibility to provide a safe environment for that kind of stuff. And while we may downplay that, maybe you're a little disconnected from that. Maybe you are a mature adult and it's just, oh, well, just keep your kids in line. You won't have a problem, right? How are you going to feel? And I don't want to be overly dramatic with this, but I do want us to think, how are you going to feel? Well, if it's my kid, if it's your kid, your grandkid, how are we going to feel when a kid actually gets hurt? I think it's important to stop and reflect on that because sometimes we tend to downplay the importance of that, but we as a church have a responsibility to provide that safe environment, and I really think that we need to focus some attention on that. So in terms of safety, that's one area that we need to be aware of. Something that goes hand in hand with that, I've talked a little bit about kids running through the parking lot, but even in terms of our traffic flow, you know, Doug's a guest here tonight, and he kind of made a joke about, you know, figuring out the flow of our parking lot as he came in, and all of that, you know, it's a joke. It's kind of funny because we're not going to run into each other, hopefully, in the parking lot. Hopefully. But it is something to consider, right? again, being welcoming if you're a visitor. What if you're a handicapped visitor and maybe you're just elderly, relatively immobile? I know this has been an issue in my own family, bringing guests in, where you can't necessarily get parking that's close enough, and it makes it very, very difficult for access to the facilities. So these are things to consider. When we look at that, again, all I want to say is just, again, back out from what's familiar, what you know, and think of it from the terms of a position of a guest. Think of it as someone who's unfamiliar. There's another major factor when we're thinking about the why, and some of these things are actually up-and-coming issues for the next year, and that is maintenance. And a lot of what we classify as maintenance is really repair and improvement. Even talking with Donna a little bit, batting around the numbers about, well, how do we classify what is utility cost and trying to separate that from the improvements that we've made and all those kinds of things. Sometimes those numbers get really fuzzy. You can push them one way or the other. But when I think about this, I'm not necessarily talking about a financial classification, but rather like a mental category. Think of it this way. When I talk about maintenance, I'm talking about systems or structures that are overtaxed. In other words, they were built for a capacity or a purpose, and we've taken them far beyond that capacity or purpose. Okay? Does that make sense? The first one that comes to mind is HVAC systems. We've already addressed some of that down in Helder Hall. A lot of that appears to be taken care of, but for those of you who remember the last few weeks of summer, anybody sit in the overflow area the last few weeks of summer? Yeah, remember the fans, right? We're just trying to keep up with the systems, and those systems are being overtaxed. It's something that we're going to have to address. But what I want to be clear about is that we can replace an air conditioning unit. We can do that. But when we look at doing that, are we throwing good money after bad? We do that. How long does it last? How effective is it? Is it going to actually achieve the objective? If so, did we actually meet the goal? That's really what we need to think about, and that's where we need to zoom out and take a look at this. Some of it is it was system design, the way that the system was designed. Some of it is the way it was installed. And again, this is not meant to tear down what anybody has done in the past. It's just the fact that we've really taken these structures and systems far beyond what they were intended for. So think about this. Quick experiment. When we're comparing maintenance costs, improvement costs, and those kinds of things, what I want to get to is the value of good planning for a well-designed facility. Okay? Think of it this way. How much do you think we lay out in utility costs to maintain these buildings on a monthly basis? I'm not going to get really specific because it is hard to nail that down. But can I say that we're talking several thousand dollars for both facilities. Now, just for round numbers, let's take a 50-50 split and we'll say $1,400, $1,500 a month for Helder Hall. Okay? Let's compare that to the cost of the facility. Now, the facility is built in 83. We'll round it to 30 years. We just did renovations. We'll expect it to give us another 25, 30 years of life. So let's just say, best case scenario, 60 years. 60 years for that building. And we look at the cost of it with the renovations, the original price. And if we adjust that for inflation, let's just say round numbers, we have $600,000 in that facility. Over 60 years, that's $10,000 a year. Break that down, that's $1,000 a month. Do you get where I'm going with this? The cost of the building to design and build and remodel and all that kind of stuff is still less than our monthly utility bills in that building. I think that's important. It reorients your thinking just a little bit. So when we talk about the expense of professional planning and constructing a new building and all those kinds of things, that's where we really start to see the money make sense when we plan. We plan effectively, so that we can look at having a facility that is very energy efficient. Things like looking at solar with a payback. Is it worthwhile? We need to actually analyze that. We need to look at how the building is built, the energy efficiency of it, so that we're actually seeing that we are good stewards of that money. When we talk about planning for that, that's something I think is really exciting. A lot of us tend to get really, really excited. I know I'm one of those guys. I was just sitting with Pastor Joe talking a little bit, and we're talking about the possibility for outdoor recreation, not necessarily hunting, but, you know, whatever, volleyball, soccer fields, camping pavilion, summer picnics, all that kind of stuff. That is just so cool. That's great to think about. It really is. And we tend to be like typical York County men. Let's get some hammers and get it done right now, right? Let's just jump in and do it. Yeah, well, there's some good reasons not to do that, right? And if you need a good example, you can look at me and my house, and you'll understand why we shouldn't just jump in and do it without effective planning. And all joking aside, we need to do that. But it takes time, and it takes money, and it takes patience. We have to be patient. So realistically, we should actually be starting that planning phase now. Okay, and I'll talk a little bit more about timelines as we kind of wrap this up. But I think going back to our Helder Hall example and talking about real construction costs, some of this stuff is somewhat boring, but I think it's really important for us to remember. I did a little bit of research, actually a lot of research, to determine the effectiveness of good construction planning. And you know what I found is that actually good construction planning costs on average 14% more for the project. Well, that's kind of crazy then. Why would you pay more for the project? Because what you see is a net reduction of 24 to 25% in costs of change orders, things that you didn't expect, right? Or things that are going to change at the last moment, costs of operation, so that when we talk about the energy costs and the cost to operate that building over its lifespan of 40 years, suddenly we see that payback end over end, better than 10% advantage. It's important to look at that because otherwise we're going to say, wow, that's a lot of money to pay an architect or an engineer on the front end of this. Can't we just figure it out and get it done? You know, let's revisit Helder Hall. And being part of the building team, I kind of saw how that happened. You know, looking at, you know, the members of the building team that were involved in that whole process, you know, it was just something that we just kind of moved through the process. Just keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving. We never took time to effectively plan the whole project with a professional who understood. We were trying to make sure that we were being good stewards of the money and trying to limit those expenses. And again, this is not to go back and kick anybody. This is just saying we've learned and we have to benefit from that education. Okay? So think about this. We projected $280,000. That those renovations would cap at $280,000. We ended up spending $360,000. That's a pretty significant amount of money in difference, right? I mean, you might have $80,000 laying around. I don't. And so to be good stewards, we have to look back and say, okay, what did we learn, right? Not to beat anybody up. What did we learn? What are we going to do better the next time? So some of the things that really influence that heavily, change orders. We just changed our mind in a lot of areas, things that we decided that we just didn't know, we didn't think about before we started. You know, additional improvements, materials overruns, errors in the plans. Now, somehow I thought we should have saved money, though, because somehow 20 feet of our gym was missing in the architectural plans, but it ended up costing us more money. I don't know. Insufficient skilled volunteer labor. Long descriptive term, insufficient, we didn't have enough, skilled, better than myself and the pastors in terms of skilled ability. Now think about it, though, we have people who are skilled, and man, we leaned on them so heavily, they were here all the time, and they were making sacrifices that really we shouldn't expect them to make, and so that was a factor, and it got to the point where we just said, you know what, we need to finish this, and we can't burden our congregation and our pastoral staff for construction anymore. We need to plan for that next time, right? Code compliance. Yeah, that hurt. That hurt a lot. It still hurts, actually. I'm dredging it up, and some of you probably right now have a sour taste in your throat because of it. You know, we really don't like code compliance. You know what? In my flesh, I want to say I'm with you, but we've got to do it. We are responsible to the government to comply with the codes that they've set, and we have to do that, but not at the last minute. We need to plan for it effectively in advance. And so all of these things go back to that same word, planning, planning, planning. So we ended up at $360,000, but you know what? Praise God, we learned from it, and we came through it debt-free. And so we need to be thankful for that and learn from it. So when we think about the importance of good planning, some of those things that we talked about, you know, our energy bills. We can't make energy bills go away. We can use technologies like solar, make sure that our systems are highly efficient, consolidate our facilities so that we don't have multiple buildings that need to be maintained. That matters in the scheme of things, even in terms of maintenance for grass and parking lots and snow and all those kinds of things. It matters. Consolidating facilities, planning effectively, heating and cooling multiple spaces. In simple terms, we need to be good stewards of our resources. But something else that needs to go with that, we need to prepare our hearts for change. This can be very, very personal, very personal. And so it requires each one of us to commit to unity. I can remember Pastor Joe just reinforcing this. We are going to pray for safety and unity. And what was the third thing? The glory of God. We need to start praying for that now because we're actually already in the planning phases. We're buying a piece of property, and already there are as many disparate ideas as there are people who think, well, we should do this or we should do that. And there are so many different things that we could do, but we need to be effective in planning and submissive to our leadership. And I think that's really important as we look at moving forward, because we're talking about some really big chunks of change if we talk about developing these things in the way that we're seeing. So things aren't going to stay the way that they are. God's leading us in a direction for ministry. All of these things are changing, and the facilities are going to change with them. It's not, I'm not advocating that we abandon what's old, but just incorporate what's new. So we talked about the why. So I'll wrap us up by talking about what are some of the areas that need to be addressed. I'll just reinforce some of those, and then we'll talk about how this is going to look moving forward. We already talked about safety, flexibility, and good stewardship, right? So this is just an exercise. I'm going to throw this out there, and maybe it'll get some of your wheels turning. But this is an exercise in uncovering all of the pain points that we have in our facilities. Where do we have immediate areas that need to be addressed? I talked about safety. We're already working on addressing some of that. You've seen what Ron has been doing around the place, and he's done some simple things that have made a huge impact in terms of visibility, doors with windows in so we don't smack people in the nose or knock them down the steps, repainting the hallway to brighter color so we can actually see downstairs. It's a little brighter, a little cheerier. It doesn't feel like a dungeon. Maybe getting Sandy out of the basement so that she's not sniffing mold all week long. But these are some simple things that we're doing. We're talking about improving our parking lot layout, just working with what we have, improving some of the pedestrian traffic flows. And praise God, if we have the ability to repurpose the house here for administrative offices, which is just a thought at this point, but it looks like a good plan, that's going to allow us to free up some space in the building, okay? And we can use that to improve some of our traffic flows in and out of the building. We do still have to do some repair. Whether we go all out with that, remains to be seen. But the fact of the matter is, when the weather gets warm, we need to do something with the air conditioning system here. So keep that in mind. The basement, it's an area of difficulty just simply due to access. It's very difficult to get in and out because of the stairs, and flow is very difficult there. The rooms are generally very inflexible. Concrete block tends to be inflexible. So we have all that with drainage and moisture problems. So there are some of our areas that need to be addressed. The youth group, big area. Wednesday night, look at that. How cool is that? When we redesigned Helder Hall, man, I don't know if you guys remember, we were up there one night nailing down plywood. I think Dale Tyson was there. I can't remember who all was involved in that. But we're looking at this expanse of open plywood saying, this is awesome. Look at all this space. We're going to have so much room. And what was it, 1 month, 2 months in? We're at capacity for the youth. We're pushing at the walls. That is so cool. It really is. Sorry, I don't mean to use that word. But, honestly, this is great. This is a blessing from God. He is showing us that honestly, he's in control of church growth. But we need to facilitate that. And so that's an area of pain that we need to look at. Pastor Joe and some of the other leaders have already developed somewhat of an idea to make that more flexible on Wednesday nights for our youth, and we'll see how that plays out in the upcoming weeks. Sunday school classes, most of those are doing okay. We're doing okay. We have 10 Sunday school classes, and that's enough for capacity. A little bit of inflexibility there, but we're doing okay. Sanctuary. Sanctuary is where we've got some ideas that are already starting to work through. and some of those that will be a little bit more significant in terms of change for seating. Not necessarily increase our capacity. You know, the room is what the room is, but there are ways to better utilize the space that we have and fill in a lot of these empty spaces in the center of the pews. And so that's one of the things that we're really aiming for. So if things change with your seating and things aren't exactly, your seat isn't exactly where it used to be, don't get upset. We're just trying to improve things and really utilize what we do have. So when we talk about capacities, over 225, we start to get a little bit tight. You know, as Randy was counting this morning, I was thinking we had 250 people in the sanctuary. And realistically, we were 215 in the sanctuary, 235 total. So we're not pushing 300. We have seating for 300. We add seats in. We could make it to 300, but we're not even close to that. And we're already starting to feel a little bit pressed. So just keep that in mind. We need to address these things. So thinking of the future, you know, vehicle traffic and parking is still something that really, on a larger scale, needs to be addressed. Pedestrian traffic and safety, hospitable facilities in all weather conditions, places for people to come and go, access for elderly and disabled, classrooms and offices, upgraded mechanical systems, foundation and structural issues of existing building. I just rattled off quite a few things that need to be addressed. That's the what of it. And how does this all take place? And I'll close with this. First of all, what I just said, review what we have and let's make the most of it. If you have ideas for flexibility of the facilities, don't keep them to yourself. It doesn't mean that it's going to be employed. There may be somebody else has a, you know, another idea that we're working through, but please feel free to share those. Keep an open dialogue, okay? But we want to make the most of what we have. So those are the things we just talked about. And really, there's a number associated with that. What we want to do is make this facility effective for the next 5 years. 5 years, that's the goal. So if we can take what we have and make it usable and flexible for that time span, we're going to do that. But secondly, this is where we go beyond 5 years. We need to develop a full campus plan to make the most of the property that God's given us. That requires, again, professional planning. And it's expensive. It's one of those things that you think about planning and you're not seeing something, a tangible that you get for it. It's not like construction where you can see the frame going up and all that kind of stuff. But it's very important that we do this now so that 5 years out, God provides, God blesses this and say, this is the work that I want you to do. I want you to do this. Then we're ready. We're ready. We have the initial plans. They're in place. Township approvals, engineer stamps, and we start digging. That's the goal. So my whole purpose in most of what I'm saying tonight is really to convey that we need to make these preparations now for that 5 years, because it does take a long time. So we need to look at how to use the entire property to build facilities that meet the future demands of the community. And that's a word that I'm introducing. I haven't used before, but I think that's really important. If our property can be community-centric, so that we interact with the community, I both benefit, the community benefits, Calvary Bible Church benefits. It's really a relationship that we should be fostering and encouraging. And so we need to plan for the construction of a new parking area and access to all areas of the campus. So my goal is by January 2013 that we are employing a planning firm that is prepared to handle the unique challenges of church planning, because churches are a little bit different than a school or a commercial building. You know, we have all these people that are involved in the process, and it's so dynamic and has to be so flexible. So we've done a lot of research. Frankly, we've suffered a lot of pain with the previous experiences, and so we've done a lot of research to determine what is our best firm to work with moving forward. So not only can they plan effectively, but they can actually convey to us visually what they're planning. Right? How many of you saw the black and white plans that we use down in the gym? Larry built that beautiful big table to sit them on. Did any of you understand, well, aside from Bob Fry, did any of you understand what those plans actually meant? Okay, Larry did. Aside from that, the bulk of us, we don't know what those black and white lines and text on white paper really mean. We really don't understand them, so we need to get some visuals so that we understand. It really helps. First of all, it gets us excited. We can see it. We can plan for it. We can get excited about it. Aside from that, there's not quite the same expectation for disappointment when it, I didn't realize it was going to look like that. I can't remember how many times walking into the gym, I really didn't think it was going to look like that. That's not what it looked like on the plan. So we need to be prepared for that. It's an interactive process, by the way, in talking with our architectural firm. There are a lot of surveys and meetings that are required, so your feedback is important, and that's, again, part of the planning process. So that construction plan ideally is going to start at or before that five-year mark as God provides. And Pastor Joe has been you know, drilling this into me. We've got to keep that plan out there. We've got to prepare for this. And as God provides, we need to be prepared to move forward. And so we're tasked with that as a building team, but also as a congregation. Third, this is outside building facilities, but again, it goes back to the main purpose. Let's get busy serving through opportunities that all of these improvements allow. You know, think about the outdoor recreation areas, filling up our youth for Wednesday and special Friday services, serving large-scale meals that reach beyond our existing church family into the community. And it's the purpose for all this planning and spending and work. That's it. So bring it all back around full circle. It's to bring glory to the name of God in East Prospect, around the world. All this from this little, you know, little town in nowhere, Pennsylvania. That's really our goal, is to use these facilities, to use these buildings to the glory of God. And so our goal is to effectively plan for that, but we need you to participate in that process. So that wraps up what I wanted to cover tonight. I think Pastor Joe is going to give you an opportunity for feedback or questions. If some of you have some questions that would require more in-depth conversation or discussion, feel free to approach myself or one of the members of the building team so that we can keep an open dialogue, and that way we can all prepare more effectively.
A lot of details, lots of things that you're thinking about. Wow, I don't think about those kinds of things in terms of our church. But I want you to look back. We talked about history. I want you to think about men. Some of you remember men like Paul Smeltzer, who told me many times he was here until, you know, in just this first little building, 2 o'clock in the morning, working. As to get the church ready so that June, I don't know, June 7th, I think it is, 1951, they could have the dedication. You know, and if you go up in the attic, you'll see barn flooring. You'll even see that right around here somewhere, there's a gate, a barn gate there that was the roof. Somebody tore down. I hope they knew they were tearing down the barn. Maybe that's why they were here so late. They were going, never, anyway. Think about the things that went on in the past so that we could be where we are today. For the most of us, many of you, and most of us, the things we're talking about now, buying this place and moving the offices up there so that we can then build a sanctuary out here and see all of the things that are going on back there, you know, baseball fields, soccer fields, massive picnic pavilion, hiking trails, biking trails, center of community kind of thing, those kind of things, you'll never get a chance to enjoy them. All right? Oh, wow, let me sign me up, let me go. But think about our kids and our grandkids and our generations to come until Christ comes again. Many of those people. In fact, there's only a few of you sitting here today who were actually here back in 1948 when the church started in a little house over here off of the corner of Snyder Corner Road, 13 people and a dog. Dog's gone too. Right? So the opportunities there are here for us now to plan for and plant for the future. We're not just looking tomorrow or next month or 5 years. I'm talking 25 years from now. Okay? That's what you want to have in your mind. I want you, when you give. Lord, I'm not giving this for tomorrow. I'm giving this for 25 years down the road. I'm giving this for 50 years down the road. So that maybe, God, you'll take this and you'll do things with it that I never even dreamed possible. Lord, just like that little boy with his loaves and his fish. Lord, I don't know. Here it is. I'm going to give this. Say, look, we need probably just to purchase the property about another $65,000. That's what it comes out to. And then to do the initial renovations, moving the offices out here for temporary purposes and doing some renovations in here, that's not even counting that yet. But right now we need $65,000. All right? My goodness. Here it is again. Do you feel like, and then we're talking about taking mission trips and doing all the, you feel the weight of that, don't you? Like, man, some of you want to say, Joe, will you just stop? No, I won't actually. Let me take you someplace. As I was feeling that this week, I want to take you to Nehemiah chapter 1. And then we're going to close. Well, give you some questions, and then we're going to close. Nehemiah chapter 1, you know the whole story about Nehemiah. I went here, just my devotions, just reading. I was feeling, there's so many things, just lots of weight this week. Lots of weight, dealing with people who are going through things, and then just lots of things. And I thought, Lord, I just need something here. And here's Nehemiah's prayer. He hears about what's going on back at Jerusalem, how Jerusalem is just destroyed, walls falling in, things aren't the way they, and he's just discouraged about this. And he begins to pray. In fact, he wept and mourned for days and continued fasting and praying. And he says in verse 5, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, that now I pray before you day and night for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. You see this, how it's going here. And then I want you to see verses 10 and 11. Because the tendency for us is to focus, to be inward focused, to focus about me or you or people, and the focus isn't supposed to be on us at all, it's supposed to be on God. Notice what he says, verse 10. They are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. Now, those of you who are in my Foundations of Bible Study class, one of the things we noted today is to look for repeated words if we want to find the theme of a text. And here's a great opportunity. What's the repeated word here in verse 10? What is it? Your. What could we say the theme of this verse may be? God. There's a great answer. God, you're always right saying that. They're your servants. They're your people whom you've redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. Oh, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name. And give success to your servant today and grant his mercy in the sight of this man. Listen, I want you to understand something today. I want you to understand a truth about this project. I want you to understand a truth about Christianity, about who we are. Your identity, my identity, our identity is not defined by or explained by our ability, our ingenuity, our wealth, our strength. But listen, our identity, even our very existence, is defined by our relationship to the Almighty God whose servants we are. Notice, we are His servants. We are His people. We are His redeemed. And we take delight in His glory. So all I'm telling you, folks, is you hear these things as we go on, and you see we our tendency is to focus on the fact that we're small. God doesn't focus on the fact that we're small. The fact that David was small made him utterly qualified to go to battle against Goliath. We need not megachurch muscle. Right? It's about him. So So every time you begin to think, my goodness, how are we going to go these ways? Keep remember, we are His people. I'm His. His servant. I'm His people. We're His people. We're His redeemed. He specially chose you. Selected you out. We long for His glory. We take delight. We take special delight in His glory. So I'm telling you, I want you to look at that number, what we need now, $65,000. I want you to look at that number and think Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 10 through 11 kind of things about that. I want you to think about, you know, here we are as a church. We laid out our strategic ministry plan a couple years ago. Three goals. Maintain ministry. Second, multiply. Plant other churches in this area. Third, mission. Launch out into the world in seeing people brought to Christ and churches strengthened and leaders trained. Maintain ministry, multiply mission, ministry, and mission ministry. That's what it's about. You say, how can we do that? Well, we're His servants. He takes special care of His servants. We are His people. He takes special care of His people. We are His redeemed. He takes special care of His redeemed. And the great desire of all His redeemed, of all His people, and all His servants is His glory. So that's where we're going, folks. That's where we're going. This next year, by January 15th, 2013, by God's grace and for God's glory, we'll purchase that property. We'll purchase that property. And the next day, we're going to start doing some renovations on it. Lord willing, we'll be able to move the offices up there. We'll be able to address the issue of flexibility here and be able to spread out a little bit more, taking care of those kind of things. And we'll see that ministry going on for the future. So my desire for you is to say, listen, how can we participate in what God's already doing? He's obviously already doing something. I said something a couple weeks ago. I said, listen, if you doubt this, if you say, how's this? Here's what I just don't even give and don't participate. Somebody came up to me afterward and said, Pastor Joe, why would we even do that? It's so obvious that God's doing this work. That'd be stupid of us to not participate. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. God's at work here, and that's what's awesome to see. God's at work, and we are, again, we're His servants, we're His people, we're His redeemed, and we long for His glory. Let's just join what He's doing. All He's looking for is a couple of weak people. Are there any weak people here? Anybody? There's four of you. No, I'm serious. How many weak people do we have here? How many unqualified people? Insufficient people. All right. We're in. Great. That's exactly what we need. A bunch of insufficient, unable, weak people. Sounds like this is the perfect place for God to be at work. I believe that, don't you? And man, it's been a privilege to be a part of what God's doing. I'm looking forward to being a part of what God's to continue being a part of what God's doing. Just riding along. I'm a bandwagon jumper, really. I'm on this wagon, and we're along for the ride, being diligent stewards of what God has done. I know those are kind of general plans. I know we don't know exactly because we haven't laid out the plans yet. That's what the whole purpose is to say we're going to plan specifically. You know, I'd like to tell you all my dreams and all the desires, but we get in trouble doing that because then we just won't do that. But I'm telling you, it's going to be awesome as we move forward for the glory of God. But maybe you have a question. You know, I always say it's not a time to give us a piece of your mind. It's a time for us to say, hey, I have an honest question. Or I could say this, if you don't have one that you want to voice here, maybe you can talk to Corey or a member of the building team, Jason or Amos or Sandy. Did I miss anybody? Talk to one of the elders and just ask that. But maybe you have something you'd like to bring up now that there'd be a question that we could answer or something we didn't address fully that would be specific. I don't think we're going to have one special day to take an offering. I think this way, if you want to give, give. And we'll see if the Lord will provide through the giving of His people. Money. Yeah, if you want to give, just use the offering envelope, and you can use the building fund or the land fund section. Because from now on, everything that comes into the building fund, there's money in there now that's earmarked for certain things, for changes around here. But from now on, anything that comes in will go right to that land acquisition in the building fund. Thanks. Wayne. Yeah, we won't pay tax. Now we will have to pay a transfer tax when we buy it, right? We did that before, but we won't pay taxes on that. Probably what we'll do, now this is just thinking, we'll probably keep that deeded separately from this until we get everything moved around and exactly where we need it to be, and then we'll address it later. But it will be still, it won't be taxed. Other than the transfer or whatever that is when you buy property, when you go to settlement, we'll have to pay that way. Yeah, thanks. Larry. Go ahead. What's that? Everybody close your eyes for a minute. Wow, okay. I wish I could share with you all my desires and dreams of what we're going to do, but we'll. Someone else? I just get excited about what I see the Lord doing. Yeah, Brother Jim. Well, there's so many opportunities, for ministry. It's unbelievable. It really is. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Brian. Say it again. It's zone residential. Yeah, it would be, would it be residential? Does anybody know? Huh? Yeah, residential agricultural. That's it. Yeah. I think it's industrial. Yeah, Grandpa. Well, we're hoping to get about $20,000 a month for it because they get the blessing of being close to the church, you know. Get that extra blessing. We don't know exactly. I am not a particular fan of going into the maintenance business. I don't know that we'll do that, but I do know that the opportunities are there. If we choose that way, we may choose that way. Right now I'm thinking missions houses. We'll see. We'll see what the Lord will do. There are people living in the trailer right now. Yeah. Did I tell you that there is a mobile home back there now? Okay, there is a mobile home back there. It's in pretty decent shape, and there are people living there now. We will have to honor their lease until June, for sure. And then we'll make a decision whether or not we extend that lease or we just convert that into a missions home. Yeah, Corey. Yeah. Basically, what you do, you go straight back this hedgerow here in line with the driveway, straight back, and when you get to the back of the property, it's cornfield. It kind of goes up a hill a little bit, and then down over the hill, it's a little open, but it's a lot of wooded area, kind of slopes down under. It'd be perfect for hiking trails, mountain biking trails. Be great to have our camping area back there and places where kids can just relax together, be a wonderful thing. It really is. But I'd say probably, I don't know, 6 acres wooded, you think? 6 acres wooded, maybe 6.5 acres wooded, and the rest would be what they call tillable land, I suppose, which is in farming land right now, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, for now, mm-hmm. And I don't see that changing right now for the next foreseeable future. Somebody else? Oh, Brian. No. Local farmer down the road. Anybody else? Well, there's lots of, again, lots of opportunities. What I love about being part of the church is how God takes and uses different people. So don't ever be afraid of either bringing an idea. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that that idea will get run with. Don't ever be afraid of doing that, though, because you know, God puts different people in places just to balance out. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said, you know, I appreciate the balance in the council of elders, because you know, I like to do things. And I said, you know, I'm glad that we have people to kind of balance out. Otherwise, we'd be, you know, 90 million in debt and whatever. But we have that balance that the Lord is just using, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Yeah, Brother Jim. Yeah, I believe what I'm hoping. Is that this parking lot out here will actually become the sanctuary eventually. We will... We have a garden hose, so that's good. We have that especially put in. Got $19.99 at Ollie's. And no, we will run into that, I'm sure. Yeah. Anybody else? Where? Oh, okay. Would you stand together with me and take your hymnal? I remember listening to the... dedication service. I think it was June 7th, 1951. And I can still hear Warren Helder in his inimitable voice saying, "What we need is a good Bible-preaching, Bible-believing church." And I heard people in the back say amen in the tape. And he said, when we began this church, we decided we were going to do it in the will of the Lord. At that point, everybody stood and they sang number 371. "Have thine own way, Lord, have thine own way. Thou art the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will, while I am waiting, yielded and still." And I think not only for us as individuals, but for us as the church, that's a wonderful prayer to pray. May God, you use me in whatever way you want for your glory. Can we sing that as our prayer to close together? Just the first verse. "Have thine own way."